Okay. So, we're talking about the first chapter in the time section of the Dynamics of Time and Space book. And the question, sorry, I'm still kind of recovering here. The point that the chapter is making is that although we accept this linear structure of past and present and future, our only experience is of the present. And I think one way to think about that, excuse me, that might be helpful is that you could think of past and present future and present and future as being like three boxes. It's a very spatial understanding of time. So we imagine that we occupy the middle box, I guess, which is the present, and then we can reach out and enter the second box, which is the, you know, the first box, which is the past, or the third box, which is the future. But there's this, of course, there's this very funny thing that happens, which is whatever box we enter becomes our present experience. So even if we're thinking back on something that happened to us in the past, it's our present memory that we're having. And there's really nothing else going on, really nothing ever anything else going on but the present, even if the content has to do with the past or the future. And one way to think about that might be helpful is if you think of a moment in the past, and you can do this, just think of what was going on 10 minutes ago when we were trying to connect, and then you come back and listen right now, and then you go back and think of that same moment again, you could say that the reference is the same moment, but the experience that you're having when you go back to it for the second time is a completely different experience. The content is the same, but that doesn't make the time the same. We never really, we duplicate the content, but we never really go back, or we never really have an experience of the past. And essentially the same thing is true as with respect to the future. So in the guidance essay for last week, I gave the example, which seems like it might be a counterexample, of looking at a mountain and saying, well, that mountain is here on the basis of the past. So we say, well, gee, we must be in contact with the past because the only reason the mountain is here is because it was here a moment ago, and it was here the moment before that, and so on and so on and so on. But the reality is that even then, the idea of the past that we have is really conceptual. We say, well, the past must have been here, but that doesn't mean that we're in contact with it. Somewhere in one of the TSK books, I think it's in this book, but I'm not sure, Rinpoche says, if we're holding a rent check, then there must have been a lodger. If we've been paid money for renting out our house, then someone must have rented out our house. But that doesn't mean that we have any experience of that previous instance of renting out the house. That's the basic point, really, that's being made, in at least in the first part of this chapter. And my concern for us as we go about our investigation is that that sounds really conceptual. We say, well, okay, I don't really have any experience of the past, any immediate experience of the past. I only have my memory of the past. But so what? I still have to operate as though I was in a past, present, future structure, and so that doesn't make any difference to me. But the reason it does make a difference, and the place where this chapter is going, is that if there is no immediate experience of the past or of the future, if there's only this immediate experience of the present, then our understanding of the present must be really different too. Or a better way to say that is, our understanding of what the present must be is probably just as wrong as our typical assumptions that the past and the future are operating in exactly the same way as the present is. If we're wrong about the past and we're wrong about the future, then we must be wrong, or we're very likely wrong, about the present too. And so there's a possibility that we can connect into a very different understanding of the past. So, sorry, of the present. Let me take a deep breath at that point, because I'm still sort of jangled from our not having been able to get this going the right way in the first place, and see if anybody has any questions as far as we've gone so far, or any comments. Yes, no?
No.
Yes? You okay?
But the example, Jack?
Yes.
At the example you used about the renter, your voice was mumbling. I didn't get it. So if you receive the rent from someone, you can't experience the process of renting the house? I didn't get that.
Well, it's basically saying, and you know, maybe it's simpler to stay with the example of the mountain, but I've always liked that example for some reason of Rinpoche's. We're holding a rent check in our hand. And in order to make sense of the fact that we're holding a rent check in our hand, there has to be some explanation, you could say. And the explanation must be that somebody is renting our house from us. And so it belongs to our present experience of having the rent check in our hands that there is a past which explains that particular thing. But that does not mean that we're having an experience of the one who's renting the house or the signing the contract for the house or any of that. All of that is really a part of our present experience. And the only past that we ever contact is the part of the past which has an effect in the present. So the effect in this case is I have a rent check in my hand. And that's the explanation, basically. And what Rinpoche says in this chapter is that if we imagine a past that doesn't have any present effect, then it's as though that past doesn't exist at all. Because it's really only in its present effect that the past is available to us. The past is not available to us in our immediate present. Now we have to kind of think about what that might mean, because it would be, it would be very laborious, it would be very artificial if we said we can't talk about the past, we can't talk about the future, because the only experience that we're having is present experience. That just doesn't, that's not very helpful. If that's the only consequence of this. So we're going to have to find a way of talking about the present and the role that the past and the future play in the present that let us continue to make sense of our ordinary experience, which obviously does unfold in past, present, future terms. But the point that is being made here is that since we don't have immediate experience of the past and we don't have immediate experience of the future, then our usual understanding of the present is also very likely to be, in some sense, limited or mistaken. And we have the opportunity to really look at the present, which at least seems to be real, in a different way, and to start to investigate what that could mean. So the way to investigate that is in terms of what Rinpoche calls, and it's the title of the chapter, the past, present, excuse me, the present body of time. And it's actually a nice phrase, the present body of time, because it suggests this idea that the present is embodied. If we're thinking in terms of a past, present, future, linear time, then the present is this funny little moment, and this gets talked about in the chapter. The present is this dividing line between the past and the future. And the only reason we can call something the past and call something else the future is that we're in this constantly moving dividing line. But really, there is no present. There's just the past and the future, and then a kind of a, like a, like being in a lighthouse, you could say. And, you know, we're looking on one direction toward the past, we're looking in the other direction toward the future, but the lighthouse itself is just an observation point. There's nothing going on there. And that is so completely wrong in terms of our experience, because our experience is that the present is exactly where everything is happening. So the model, which is this linear model, and the reality of our experience are completely at odds with each other. And if we try to make sense out of that difference, out of that conflict between the two, we can begin to do that, and this is Rinpoche's point really, we can begin to do that by looking at the present body of time. And he also talks about that in terms of the presenting of time. If we could learn to conduct time differently, and I'm using the term conduct now in a kind of technical sense that will become clear as we go further in this program, if we could learn to do that, then the way we have of relating to time could line up much more with our experience and could open up in different ways. And that's really what we're interested in, is how can we open our usual understanding of time. And one way that Rinpoche asks that question is on page 75, when he talks about a time bridge. And I wanted to say something about that because I think it's not completely clear in the text what's being said. He's basically saying that when we think about the past or when we think about the future, we are making a kind of leap. And this actually happens all the time. I mean that literally. It happens in every moment of time. We're always reaching out. And if you think in terms of descriptive knowledge and intentional knowledge, you could say we reach back into the past to describe what's going on. And an example for that is that example with the lodger who has paid us a rent check. We describe what makes sense out of our experience of holding the check in our hand. So we reach back to the past, or we reach forward to the future, and that has to do with our intentions and concerns. So maybe we're holding this check in our hands, and we're thinking, we're having the thought, oh good, now I'll be able to buy dinner because I have some food. Because I have some money, rather. Now, that reaching out from where we are right now to the past or the future is itself an activity, and that's the time bridge that Rinpoche is talking about. In order to change our experience, in order to get from one experience to another experience, something has to happen. There has to be a movement. And so the question he's asking is, what's the time that makes that movement possible? So if we look back to the past, that's just another content of experience, and we add to that content the label past. This is something that happened in the past. It's something we can describe. But the looking back itself has to happen within a temporal dimension, within a kind of a dynamic, or else we would always be having the same experience forever. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, so that dynamic, that's what Rinpoche is interested in, and that's where he's asking us to look. Now, I did suggest in the guidance for this week that you might want to experiment with the exercise. It's basically an exercise that's given on page 99 of Dynamics of Time and Space, where he talks about going to that dynamic of time. He says we can go to the present, the point of arisen, right? The point where the future comes into being. It's a little bit different from what we're talking about now, or if we wanted to make the connection, we'd have to say a little more. Because what we're really saying is that in order for experience to change at all, whether it's the past, whether we're looking at the past or looking at the future, we have to engage this dynamic of time. If you want to, well, maybe it's not so important to try to square those two things together. I think it can be done, but it's just one more complication. So let's look at the actual exercise, if anybody had any experience with that. And I guess David did post something about the dynamic of time on the site, so that might be one place to start. Or does anybody have anything to say about trying to work with that exercise? No comment?
I visualize it intellectually, but when it comes to the actual action, out of knowing how that implements.
Say that again. When it comes to actually doing it, then what?
Then besides knowing that I gotta be open, completely open for possibilities, and not be so set on my way, there's no other way I know how to make that work.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think you're pointing at something that's accurate, which is that way of being open to what's going to arise in the next moment, or being open to the dynamic of time, requires a kind of a willingness to tune into possibilities. And another way of saying that would be to say that we can't rely so much on descriptive knowledge. We can't rely on characterizing what's happening in terms of the past. And partly then the question would be, well, but what about taking into account the past? And I think the answer is, sure, we can take into account the past. And again, if we look at this example of holding in our hands a check. So the check must have come from someone, and there's a whole story that we have. We don't have any problem with that story. It's automatic for us. The story is, yes, I've rented out my house to someone, and this is the rent check that they gave me. But now the question becomes, what happens in the next moment? And in order to be open to that, we have to be operating in really a different time frame. Time frame is maybe not the best word. We have to be operating in the context of a temporal dynamic. And that dynamic is one of possibility. That's maybe enough to say right now. We're just trying to get clear on what this dynamic can be. And what this time bridge is. So there's kind of a leap that we're making. And the question, as you were really suggesting, Sudaba, is so how can we do that? You know, do we really know how to do it? And on page 77 of the chapter, Rinpoche starts to raise that question, and the way he does it, or starts to explore that question, and the way that he does that is by asking, what is the relationship between past and present and future if we're not limited, if we're not accepting as true the usual the linear structure. And the usual structure says, here's the past, it's right back back over there. Usually we'd say on the left, right? And here's the future, it's over on the right, and here's this present in the center. And so they're all immediately connected to one another. But if you look at the dynamic of time, then that way of connecting up past and present and future really doesn't make sense. Because in the dynamic of time, the past and the future are, in terms of the story and in terms of our intention, are really already given together with the present. And the movement of time has nothing to do with any of that. So, for instance, if we're thinking about our lodger who's paid us rent, there's a whole past that goes along with that. There's, you know, when the lodger answered the advertisement that we put in the newspaper, and when we met the lodger, and when we agreed and signed a lease, and all of that. That's all the past. But that past is not something that's really separate from the present. It's the past and the present and the future, in terms of the content of our experience, are all given together. So the question really becomes, what's the link between the past and the present and the future that makes it possible for us to even make sense out of that experience, that underlying experience? And the question that Rinpoche raises starting on page 77, he says, and it's the last full paragraph, he says, based on the idea that it's our concerns that are setting up the past and the present and future and giving them all together, he says, well, if that's true, then we don't have a linear transition from present to future, or you could say from past to present to future. He says, really what happens is just that there's this shift from one present to the next. So a better model for thinking about that is that our concerns shift. So right now I have this rent check in my hand and I'm thinking about the lodger who paid me the rent. But then in the next moment I start thinking about where I'm going to go out to eat because I can cash the check and now I can afford to go to a restaurant. And when I do that, my present set of concerns has shifted. And with it, the past and the future have shifted as well. So the shifting involves past, present, future together. It's kind of as though it was all hyphenated. There's one past, present, future, and then there's another past, present, future. And the interesting question is, how do we make the shift from one past, present, future, or let's just call it one present, which we know includes the past and the future, how do we make the shift from one present to the next? And that's the question that Rinpoche asks, and he says, well, you know, what can we say? It seems like you would need to have time for that shift to happen. But we don't know for sure, or at least, you know, this is what we want to explore. And that's where he then begins to go on page 78. And if you look at the next to the last paragraph, he summarizes this in a way that also highlights where the question is taking us. He says, active in the present, I project, I present, I accept, and I interpret. Well, those are the basic kinds of operations that have to do with descriptive and intentional time. We accept the way things are, we kind of present them to ourselves, we project the future out of that, we interpret the whole structure to make sense out of it, and then we move on. And then he says, in the course of all this activity, all of this past, present, futuring that we're doing all the time in order to make sense out of things, in the course of all this activity, I do not actually know what the present is, how I stand in relationship to it, or how it is linked to past and future. He says, everything is a mystery. So we can say You know, we can make sense. We have a story. And we can say, okay, we're going to die, for instance. Everybody knows that they're going to die. But that's an interesting example, because even though we all know that we're going to die, we all, if you ask me that, I'll say yes, of course, we don't quite accept it. On another level, we all think of ourselves as immortal, right? Or we all lack a very good capacity to appreciate that we're going to die. Some people may be able to appreciate it more than others. But basically, we have this way of thinking which doesn't allow for that. And what that suggests is that our usual story, our past, present, future story, doesn't work. It's not really what time is all about. And the question that he raises at the end, or the suggestion that he makes at the very end of the chapter, is that the only way that our story makes sense is when we interpret it, looking backwards, and we say, well, this is what happened. This is the way it was. This is the rent check and the lodger again. And he says that basis for knowledge is just not going to be adequate. It's not going to work. We need a knowledge of time, an immediate experience of time that has to do with the dynamic of time, not with the interpretation that we make of what actually happened, of the content of what happened. As long as we're on that level, we don't know anything about time at all. And that's really the bottom line of this chapter, it seems to me. So all that comes up in the context of this story that we had the opportunity to tell about trying to make this phone call work and so on. The story's all fine and good, it all makes sense, but it's only a story, and even though we tell the story in terms of past and future, and we did this, and then we tried that, and now we finally got to the point where something is working, and now we have the next moment that's going to develop on the basis of all that. All of that is really given within the context of our present concerns and within the context of our description of what happened before. And if we're operating there, we have not yet touched the dynamic of time, or what Rinpoche calls in this chapter, time's present body. That's where we'd like to go. So that's pretty much what I have to say today. And I apologize, I think it's a little disjointed, partly because of the circumstances that we had here. But I hope that by the end we worked ourselves around to something that makes sense to people. So let me ask if there are any questions or comments about that. Well, you guys are a little disjointed too, huh? Is there anything else that we didn't talk about that people would like to raise as a question or concern?
I guess, Jack, this is Cecilia. If concern shapes the present, and most of us, I assume, have the experience of concerns seeming to be almost out, just jumping from thing to thing with no sense or seldom any capacity to sustain concern. Would it help to be able to sustain concern? Or is that a question that doesn't even make any sense here?
Well, no, I think on one level it makes perfectly good sense. You're asking, well, if we could sustain the concerns that kind of shape our story from moment to moment, then wouldn't that be a way of being more engaged with time, because our concerns would persist over time? And I think that ultimately that might not be the most satisfying way of doing it, because what we would be doing would be kind of recreating a story instead of going to a deeper level below the story. But at least if we had that experience, we would understand something more about time. And I think your point is exactly right, that what our ordinary experience is like is that our concerns are always shifting. And so even though we like to tell ourselves that that we have a kind of extended experience of time, something that engages time in more than just this moment, we have no basis for saying that. And in a certain sense, and I think I'm probably saying a little too much here, but in a certain sense you could say that if you could extend the dynamic, if you could extend your concerns, if you could keep your focus across time, in the way that you would try to do in a meditative tradition, in Buddhist meditation, say, if you could do that, then your experience of time would be a different experience. But it would still be an experience that that didn't really touch the deepest level of time, which is the presence of time. And you could say, you know, let's imagine that you could keep a single focus because you're a really great meditator, and you can just stay focused with nothing at all happening. And they talk about this in the Buddhist tradition. You know, you can do this for thousands of years in theory. In terms of what we're talking about now, the present of time or the present body of time, that thousands of years wouldn't really be any different from the momentary shifting from this concern to that concern. It still is not engaging time at the level that we're looking to engage it at. That's where I wind up on that question. It's a good question. Anybody else?
There was one passage you referred to, Jack. Past actions certainly have present consequences, but maybe not effects. Is that an acknowledgement that there is something like the past operating in the present, or that we do have some kind of continuum of experience?
Well, it is and it isn't. It really goes back to this same fundamental distinction. In order to make any sense out of the present at all, we really have to situate it in terms of the past. And so we have to be able to say the past operates in the present. But when we say that, the word operate is we have to kind of put it in quotation marks, because the past isn't really doing anything in the present. And that's what Rinpoche says. He says the past is already used up. It's just this kind of theoretical construct. So let's go back to the example of a mountain, because I think we used up, speaking of used up, I think we've used up our rent check and our lodger. So if you say, well, you know, I look out my window and there's a mountain, and you say, you know, it makes no sense to talk about that mountain without in some way having the understanding that that mountain has existed across time. If it hadn't existed across time, then it couldn't be a real mountain, right? I mean, it might be a mountain in a dream, or it might be hallucination. So in order for us to look out the window and see what we believe to be a real mountain, there has to be a temporal structure which includes the past. And so we are acknowledging the past, and we can kind of say, we can roughly say that it is through the operation of all these geologic forces that developed across or developed through time that we see the mountain in front of us today. But that doesn't actually mean that the past is operating in this moment of seeing the mountain. It just means that the past is available as an explanation, basically. And the whole past, present, future structure, the way we ordinarily look at it, is available as the background which makes it possible to explain anything. But all of that still is very different from experiencing the dynamic of time. It's perfectly useful. It makes really good sense. It's part of this story, but it leaves us completely cut off from time. Okay, so I think we should stop there for today. If you want to keep experimenting with that suggestion on page 99, as you can tell we're headed there. You know, my story is that we're going to arrive at a reading of page 99 at some point in a few weeks. But in the meantime, you can take it up as a practice to continue to do, and perhaps comment on it on the website. I did read people's postings for this week, and I noticed there haven't been that many. I didn't comment, but next week I'll be back in Berkeley, and hopefully things will settle down a little bit, at least from my perspective.